Chesapeake Potomac Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous 15 workshop on H&I, which is hospitals and institutions. And there's a couple of readings which I don't have, so we're going to kind of wing it. If I could get somebody to volunteer and come up and read who is an addict. All right, that'll work.
Hi, my name's Jim, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We're people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you. Someone volunteer to come up and read why?
Hi, I'm Jamie, and I'm an addict. Why are we here? Before coming to this fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had to lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, or psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. And now we have someone come up and read how it works.
My name's Teresa, and I'm an addict. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we are powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. But before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately. We cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone who read. Again, I'm an addict. My name is Billy. I have a few statements to read here. Okay, first, a clarity statement. We are presented with a dilemma when Narcotics Anonymous members identify themselves as both addicts and alcoholics or talk about living both clean and sober. By using such mixed language, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is somehow separate from the rest, requiring special recognition. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate in our similarities, not our differences. And this is the media statement. Our 11th tradition cautions us to practice personal anonymity in our dealing with the media. The primary purpose of our public relations efforts is to tell the story of NA and of what our program offers to the still-suffering addict. As individual members, we do not disclose last names nor appear in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If the media approaches you, please contact convention information. Okay. Like I said, I want to welcome everybody once again to the H&I workshop. And the gentleman I want to introduce, well, I didn't know who he was until I got here, but he happens to be a new kind of like member of my sponsoring network. And I've gotten help from him on numerous occasions. And I know he's qualified to speak on this topic because he's the regional chair at H&I, and he's already helped me a lot. We had a learning day not too long ago, and I learned a whole lot during that experience. So without further ado, I give you Ernest.
Hi, family. My name's Ernest. I'm an addict. And I'm a member of the CMP Regional H&I Subcommittee. And we're members of Narcotics Anonymous to take meetings to jails, hospitals, and institutions and the like for those that can't regularly get out to a meeting. And that's generally kind of where I kind of break the ice, because that's kind of an opening for H&I. And we explain what H&I is, and it stands for hospitals and institutions. And one of the things that I'd say about H&I and service is that I didn't seek H&I out. I kind of stumbled onto H&I, was directed or in that direction, and it's been a blessing ever since. It's been my a large part of my own foundation. But just to quickly qualify, I started using when I was young, like from my 12th, going on my 13th birthday, and I was just kind of sitting here thinking, saying to myself, I should have known something then, because I've shared in the past, you know, I started off slow, you know, smoking pot, but when I think about it, that first weekend, I drank Old English 800 that afternoon. Me and four other buddies smoked an ounce of reefer that night. The following day, I was popping Black Beauties and Yellow Jackets. And the following weekend, I was snorting cocaine. So something should have said something to me right then and there. You know, the progression just kind of took off. And as the story went, I thought I could handle it. I did it on the weekends. I was playing sports, and it just continued to progress until right through school. I was able to get out of school. I was able to go to college. it heightened during that period. I got out of college, and I thought I was able to handle it, in denial about a lot of using because I had accomplished some things. And in the end, there was an eviction notice on the door. My ex-wife had left with the children, and I had nowhere to live. So that's where it took me, and that's where it ended. And I had never heard of, and if I did hear or somebody mentioned Narcotics Anonymous to me, I really wasn't listening. And then a friend of mine introduced me to, or he came by to help because some folks at the job said I needed help. And I wasn't showing up at work. And when I did, I was nodding at the table at my desk because I wasn't getting any sleep. And he came by and he directed me to, got me into treatment. And from treatment, I started going to meetings. And my part, and this is H&I workshop, and what happened was this same guy was director of a treatment program in a detention center. And, you know, and things was going real well for me. And I called him up one day to show my gratitude and to thank him and say I love him. And I said, you know, if there's anything that you need me to help with service-wise or anything, because I was feeling I was doing some things at one meeting on the coffee deal, but I kind of wanted to get out of that too. And he said, well, you know, more will be revealed and it gets better. And I was like, you know, how much better can it get? You know, I was on that pink cloud in a hard way. And which was all right. But what happened was one day he called me up and said, I need you to take on a service commitment. And it was at Lawton Detention Center. And I said, I had put my foot in my mouth the way I felt because I wasn't looking for that, you know. So I was just giving some lip service. But I couldn't turn him down because to a large part, and what I understand today is that God used him to get me to this point. And so when he asked me to do that, I was like, well, okay. And so I went down to the detention center, and mind you, I had never been locked up before. I've been in front of the lineups. And only by God's grace, I wasn't picked out and I was guilty. I had been stopped and wasn't guilty. I've been caught with drugs and, not found guilty. I won't say that I wasn't guilty. I've been caught with drugs and the police threw them away. I don't want that on my block. I don't want that in my neighborhood. Plenty of reason to get locked up. But anyhow, as it went, I went down to this facility, and they had about 150 men standing in there. And I just kind of fessed up about me not having been incarcerated before. I fessed up about how nervous I was, but I was able to get through that particular meeting. And I called my friend up who's in recovery, and it was director at that time, and told him how tough that was, and I wasn't certain that I was up to that capability or the ability to do that. And then he said, well, I tell you what, and he gave me a phone number of somebody who was in H&I and said, you go to their meeting, they have a business meeting, we'll call him, they'll tell you when the business meeting is, and then you can maybe you can get some help that way because I really like you to keep coming back down here because I'm just starting this program and they need the help. So, and what happened was, I went there, I got introduced to the brother, and the brother welcomed me to come down. I went to the business meeting, and from that point on, when I said that I have a car, there's this Lawton Detention Center, and I need help. And about four or five people raised their hand. They didn't have a car, and they wanted to take a meeting down there. So I was the transportation. We started a meeting at that particular. There had been other meetings going on in Lawton, but at that particular, there was a program, a therapeutic program in Lawton that we started at that point. And that's how I got introduced to H&I. And I hear a lot of folks who share about H&I and how it, members of H&I came into a detention center or treatment center or detox center, and how, like the main speaker was saying before, was planting a seed. And that's kind of how things worked out. And I kept that commitment for 6 years until I was unable to do it any longer. But like I said, that was a large part of my recovery and my my foundation. Now, and I say that because it gave me a part of responsibility on with some place to be. Now, mind you, this meeting was on Sundays at 5 o'clock, you know, and that's year-round. And I'm a big sports and football fan. And I found myself real grateful for what change in my life had taken place, and it didn't get in the way. Super Bowl came around, and I found myself at Lawton Detention Center. And that was a profound change for me, because before, Super Bowl was the thing to do. I mean, you took all day to prepare just to get high to watch the game, you know what I mean? And the thing about it, and what was real, and for a lot of folks, the meeting was mandatory in order to stay in that therapeutic program, but folks still showed up, and they left out of there feeling better. And that's one of the things about recovery that I look at about early on, that fear about what I was giving up, what fun I was be turning away, because fun meant getting high. Fun meant, you know, having a good time meaning first, you know, you've got to have that in my system in order to have a good time. And I realized what part of living and living with some quality and recovering didn't mean all of that. And how H&I kind of really helped me to unveil that part and deal with it. But and like today, and coming in here earlier, I'm kind of laughing with my wife about you know, even now, and I was talking to a man here, I'm sorry I forgot his name, about how H&I touched a lot of folks and what the commitment is, and why you might see why you don't see a whole lot more people sitting in here. And I really wrestled with that. I'd say, and I've been in service in H&I about 7.5 of the 9 years that I've been clean. And I wrestled with that, I'd say a good 6.5 of those years. It's just recently that I understand, or I let it go, that all I can really do is my part. And while I'd like to see the rooms overflowing and people showing up in H&I, particularly where a lot of them it touched, because, for example, two men that were in that detention center are here at this convention today, you know, and that says a whole lot to see them. And that's a lot of love. And as it was said earlier, was all I can do my part is, if I'm going to take that commitment, is to show up. If I'm going to take that commitment, somewhere along the line, hopefully, and God willing, that somebody will be open-minded enough to hear the message of recovery, that there's, you know, a new way of life, that no addict need ever die seeking recovery. No addict seeking recovery need ever die from the horrors of addiction. And that there's hope, You know, because I know for myself, there was a lot of despair, and I just thought that, you know, this was going to be my life in terms of doing what I had to do to get my drug, and that was pretty much it. I just never really conceived living without being able to pick up a joint, and how that all progressed, right, to smoking crack cocaine, and how that became the priority in my life. And today, service, because one of the things that I understand for myself, and I think H&I really serves that purpose for me, one of the things I understand for myself is what they talk about, well, God, what would you have me to do? What's my purpose in life? And I understand for myself, and it's a personal part, in the relationship with the God of my understanding is to serve another human being. It's service. And if I keep it just that simple, you know, this the theme of this convention is simplicity is the key. If I keep it just that simple to serve another human being, and I get it done a large way through H&I, you know, it just doesn't stop at H&I. It starts at home. It'll start at, it can be at the job, extended family, and with H&I. But I think that through H&I, a large part of what I've done or what person I've become was through dealing and a commitment and a responsibility as an H&I member. And I never asked for it. Like I said, I was directed in this way. And I was talking to my wife earlier about a lot of times in recovery for me, and my experience has been, is just to do the footwork and allow what's going to unfold. Because generally, if something is in my life, I will, and this my thinking and disease will resist, and I'll struggle with it rather than applying the principle of surrender. I'll struggle with it. I'll deal with it in such a way that I may think, well, that's not for me, or I can't do it, and that sort of thing. If I just do the footwork and allow things to unfold, then things happen. The blessings come. And one of the sayings that I always enjoy is lessons and blessings. I look at what happens in my life and look at it not so much as something that's happening to me or it's bad because it's, things going to happen. It's just that I look at it as a lesson. What can I learn from it? And how can I go on with it? And service in H&I, and I like to say now, I like to add a part to that in the service commitment. Like I said, that, you know, I really would get frustrated when people wouldn't show up to the business meeting. I'd really get frustrated when folks wouldn't show up to their meeting commitment. 'Cause I've served on the area level, in a few trusted positions there. I've served on the regional level, a few trusted positions there. And I would just get frustrated a lot of times because I think people, you know, it's that expectation. I think people should be doing this or doing that. And really what ultimately I can't control those other people. You know, because there's had been a lot of times where folks would call up my house at the last minute. Well, I can't make it here. I fill in, you know, or I'd have to get on the phone, call some other folks to see if they could fill in. And sometimes the meeting would not go on, and that bothered me. I still take it personal. Things happen, and, you know, folks and the people at the facilities would call, and generally all that can work out. But again, on the larger picture, I do what I can do and allow things to unfold, because H&I is still around. H&I is still carrying the message. H&I is still going to go on. You know, But if I take a commitment, if I do a service commitment, I plan to hold true to that. And one of the things that I've been up at Maligna, which gives that H&I service, and there's a lot of people from up and down the East Coast are there, and I got a lot of help out of that, and I've been to some other learning days in other states, and I've learned a lot on the whole thing. And one of the things that I wanted to, that I brought along, because I like to go back to the literature a lot of times, but they've been holding out, and if you could bear with me, I like to read this, and it comes out of H&I World Service, and it's something that's been handed out for the past couple of years. And what it reads is personal commitment, commitment to H&I. Commitment means many different things to many different people. Some of these definitions may include these simple words: duty, dedication, pledge, promise, devotion, obligation, responsibility, guarantee. The principle of commitment is one that has been taught to us by the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. Hospitals and institutions work requires that we as individuals practice these principles faithfully. Oftentimes an H&I presentation provides the first exposure to recovery in NA for many addicts. Our panels may also be the only contact that these addicts receive with our program on a weekly basis. It is important that we realize that the suffering addict in the facilities we serve may depend on us for the only message of recovery they get. For this reason, we ask that you not volunteer for an H&I meeting if you are not sure you will be able to attend. If you do volunteer, make sure that you fulfill your commitment. None of us as individuals has the right to cancel an H&I meeting. By making the choice to attend a panel, we must realize that we may have to forego activities that we might prefer. Living by spiritual principles such as commitment does not always feel good. The consequences of choosing not to attend and fulfill our commitments are that we let down the addict who still suffers, the facility we serve, the reputation of NA, and our own personal program of recovery. Remember that the purpose of H&I subcommittee is to carry the NA message of recovery to addicts who do not have full access to regular Narcotics Anonymous meetings. When we drop the ball and do not fulfill our commitment, we send a complete opposite message to both the addict and the facility. This message is one of indifference and intolerance. The message conveyed is that NA does not care. By not attending, we do our personal programs great harm by living in the self-centered nature of our disease. It may take years to overcome this choice. And it lastly reads, commitment to service. The basic text of NA tells us that goodwill is best exemplified in service. Proper service is doing the right thing for the right reason. When goodwill supports and motivates both the individual and the fellowship, we are fully whole and wholly free. Proper service is a cornerstone of our personal programs. When we apply this principle of commitment to our lives, it is our experience that we grow spiritually and mentally. Sometimes we may feel that our work in H&I is futile. That is just that it just isn't working. However, that will change when you are sitting in a meeting someday and an addict comes up rushing to meet you and say, thank you for bringing them the message. If we can touch one life with our panels, then we have done our jobs. Above and beyond, we keep what we have by giving it away. H&I service will help keep us clean. And that's pretty much a capsule of what I've seen, and I think personal commitment and where H&I is concerned. In fact, one of the guys that came up to me that I saw just a short while ago who attended, who was in that therapeutic program at Lord Detention Center, he came up to me tonight and he said, you know, I take a meeting, and I forgot exactly what detention center he was saying that he was going to. But he says, I now understand what you was getting out of that meeting, because he said, what I get out of it now, taking a meeting to that particular facility, is more than really what, you know, I'm giving to them. And that's why I say that for myself, a large part of me continuing to be here has been being in service in H&I. And I think that H&I is one of those things that, as you can see here, it ain't the glamorous part. You don't get a whole bunch of, you know, folks saying, you don't have the audience or the fellowship out there. You know, it's kind of the silent part, but it's really a cornerstone in this fellowship that we're in. You don't get a lot of the accolades, because a lot of times the people that you may go to in a detox center may or may not see in the rooms. You know, it's just you and sometimes the speaker that really knows what you're doing. You know, and a large part of reward that you get, and you know, and I've heard it said and read it before, is do something. You know, do something to help another human being, and don't tell nobody about it. You know, don't look for the rewards or the accolades. And the feeling that I get out of that is a real silent peace that says, you know, what I'm doing is the right thing for the right reason. You know, what I'm doing is carrying a message to the addict that still suffers, that may not have any hope. And I do get a lot of solace out of that myself. And it's a fellowship, and H&I is a subcommittee. Sometimes in those business meetings, it can be frustrating. You know, it can be, well, somebody wanting to do it a certain way, but there's a handbook that says how to do it the right way. And to keep us on course, as they say, they used to call them the renegade meetings. Now they call the non-sanctioned meetings, you know, so as not to offend anyone, or, you know, because a meeting is a meeting, and some people carry them, you know, and they feel that they're doing what they should be doing. But nevertheless, H&I gives us that structure. H&I puts us in a certain direction that helps us to say this is the best way that it can be done, particularly when you go into certain facilities. Because even though the handbook is there, there's things that still come up. And in a large way, that can be kind of detrimental to you and your recovery. And there's some horror stories that I've heard. But nevertheless, if we follow the handbook, we follow the guidelines, and we do it the way it's already been set out for us, that, you know, generally we won't run into a lot of those pitfalls. So I get a lot out of it. And generally speaking, again, like I said, the folks that I've seen that come out of detention centers and I've seen in meetings, it says a whole lot, because I, too, have experienced that when they come up. And they say, I remember you. And I may not remember them, you know. But that's okay, you know. I know that, you know, they're out, they're in a meeting and trying to do the best that they can. So I love H&I because in his service, and I believe that it's God that uses me through this vehicle of service that helps me to stay on the path, and hopefully to plant the seed for others to stay on the path. Now, I've run out of things to say, and the other person who was to come up was, he ran out the room. That's okay. Scott said that he was gonna help up, because they did have two speakers for this meeting, and the thing is, you know, sometimes things may seem disorganized or may not go to certain. I don't put a whole lot of weight on that. What happens is what happens, and things unfold. If there's something that needs to be said or done to keep things in the right path, that should be done. Don't misunderstand me. But by the same token, if it doesn't get done or somebody's not where they're supposed to be, I no longer take it as personal as I used to. So what I'm going to do, I know that this meeting ends in about another 30 minutes. Is that right? Okay. I'm going to turn it back over to Billy. We can open it up or however he seems fit. So I appreciate everybody who is here for listening and allow me to share.
Thank you. I'm an addict. My name is Billy.
Hey, Billy.
And thank you for sharing, Ernest. Before we open the meeting up to anyone who might want to share on this topic or just share, first of all, I want to ask that you come to the microphone individually. You know, and if it's not your wish to be recorded, that's your right. All you have to do is just let the gentleman know, and he can turn the tape off before you start to speak. So, meeting's open.
My name is Sandra, and I'm an addict. And I was listening to Ernest talking about seeing people that were in institutions while carrying a meeting. And I guess I've seen maybe about 15 people since I've been here who said, I remember you bringing a meeting over to the jail or over to or down to Lorton. And that's both men and women. In 1984, I was in treatment. And I packed my bags because I was right sick of the treatment center, the people in the treatment center, and I did not believe that I belonged there. And on my way out the door, I was told that you may be able to make it, but you must have missed something because they say that you can't keep this unless you can give it back. And not only do you have a duty, but you have a responsibility to the people that come along behind you. So by the end of that year, or the beginning of 1985, I became a part of the H&I subcommittee of the D.C. area. And I did this because I wanted to come back to the treatment center that I was in. But I also did that because I was so afraid that I could not keep this if I didn't give it back. And it wasn't at that time that I really thought that I had something that I needed to keep. But while I was in the treatment center, what they said to me was that, look at your story, what happens to you. And y'all, every time I pick up, I break into D.C. jail. And it became kind of simple that if I didn't want to end back up over at D.C. jail again, that I needed to follow that responsibility. So in the D.C. area, I'm probably one of the oldest members who's still in the H&I subcommittee. This is my 17th year in recovery. Next month I have 17 years. And of these 17 years, I have been for 15 in the D.C. area. I'm one of them people who, after the H&I subcommittee no longer took a meeting to Lord D.C. jail, carried a meeting for about a year myself, and this was the year 1987, and the D.C. area sort of got organized, and they went to the institution and said that I wasn't carrying a meeting. And I was mighty pissed about that, you know. And, man, I caused a lot of corruptions in the fellowship behind that because it was people that took sides on that whole thing. Anyway, what happened was the guy that was the program director over to the jail had gone to school with me, and he said, Sandra, them people from N.A. said that you wasn't bringing no N.A. meeting over there, and I'm just going to stop it all. I'm not going to let any of them come in because I don't want no trouble out them people. So what happened was he stopped it, and somehow the DCRA was able to convince the people in the Department of Corrections that they could bring a meeting over there and be responsible for it. And then they had a meeting for the women over there, and what ended up happening was that they ain't had nobody to carry it. And it was like, oh, shit, it's my chance now to show them that they ain't had no business going over there telling them that I wasn't carrying a meeting. So, like, this was in 1988. I came back to the D.C. area Hospitals and Institutions Subcommittee, and I have been a faithful member ever since. Now, I don't believe that 10 hours a month is too much to ask. 10 hours is too much to ask for me being able to keep what I was given so freely. And I say 10 hours because I spend 2 hours at my meeting once a week, and I spend once a month 2 hours at a subcommittee meeting. And it's in the midst of a lot of confusion with that, but I don't believe that that's too much of a requirement of me to keep what was so freely given to me. And I believe that if you look at it like that, maybe it won't be such a burden. I don't know. I've read books, and I'm sort of at a point in my life right now where I'm on my correct developmental age and stage. I'm at a point at 53 years old where it's not so much about me. It's about what I can give to those who come behind me. I also know that in the midst of all of the things that get heavy, if you can just say to somebody else, it's going to be all right, and all you got to do is just keep trying, believe this, you'll get better. Because trouble ain't going to last always. The storm ain't going to be rough all of the time. But I've found that in the midst of the storm, if I can be encouraging to somebody else. See, I didn't understand in 1984 when I got ready to leave that treatment program because people had gotten on my nerves. I did not understand what they meant by, I can't keep it if I can't give it back. I believe that any addict can recover regardless to whether you think you're in the right place or not. And what I do is I share my life with people. A person who didn't come with social skills, who didn't come loving everybody, who by the time that I got to this fellowship basically sort of hated everybody. I plan to stay in H&I. People ask me, dang, you still there? Where else would I be? I'm at a point now where my child knows that every Tuesday that I'm at my H&I meeting. My family helps me with my child at this point. You know, it's not that heavy. And I'm at a point also where I don't believe that I got to do it all. I can sit in the meeting on Saturdays and see them asking for help for stuff and know that I can't be away from home but one day a week. And that I can only give the one Saturday. I've held all positions, as Ernest can say. I've been the vice chair, the area chair, the regional chair, the panel coordinator, the policy monitor, and today I'm just a good old pew member. I go in there at any given time if I want to start confusion. I'll pull out my books because I know a little bit more than everybody else and get everybody all hyped up because I'm hyped up. But it ain't their shit, it's mine. But I wouldn't go nowhere because this commitment is my link to stay here because my life is normal. You know what I'm saying? And they have a part in the text that talks about social acceptability does not equal recovery. My life is socially acceptable. I probably could get on my pony and ride. So I stay grounded right in the midst of this fellowship. I don't go to the dances and the, all of this as much as I did when I first got here because I'm okay at home now and I'm okay being with my family. So if I stay grounded right in the midst of service, they say that if you stay right in the midst of this, that you're not likely to fall off. I don't want to look up one day, and y'all, people with time use again. I don't want to look up one day and see that taking a hit on a crack pipe might be all right. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to look up one day. And I had a girlfriend that at 15 years clean, they found her with a hype in her neck. And she came in 15 years earlier smoking reefer. I don't want to walk out of this convention. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have about 20 more minutes.
Good evening. My name is Darlene, and I'm an addict. What I want to say is that I had a when I was into detox, a person from H&I came and shared there, and I heard something, and that made me want to stay clean. And that person is still today in my life. I'd rather not say the person's name, but they stay close to me, and they help me out, you know, when I need somebody, because I was to the point where I wanted to commit suicide. My mother died, and I couldn't handle it, and I wanted to just die, and that person just came to my house that night, you know, and I guess God sent that person there because I was ready to die because my mom's, and we were very close. And I can say that if I can help somebody, I help them, you know. I might not share meetings or anything, you know, I would love to, but nobody asked me, you know, to share. But on the streets, in my neighborhood, I let the people know about the program. You know, I have sisters and brothers that's still out there. I don't go around them, but I call them and let them know, you know, the program is still around, you know. And I just want to thank God that I never thought that I would be here to a convention. This is my first year convention. I've been clean for 2 years, and I feel good, and God has been really good to me because I thought that I wasn't going to be anything or do anything out of life. I thought I was going to be an addict the rest of my life until that person came in my life for me so I could, you know, see a better life. Since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, I have got two sponsors, you know. I start to love myself more, and I got a job, you know, and I can't read that well, but God seemed fit to give me a job, and I'm a supervisor, and I say, me, a supervisor, you know, and I just thank God for this program. I thank God for H&I, I'm serious because without y'all, I'm nothing, you know. And I can hold my head up today because once upon a time, I couldn't even look in the mirror at myself, you know. I hated myself that much. And I just want to Thank y'all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
My name's Tiana. I'm an addict.
Hey, Tiana.
I keep coming to H&I meetings when I come to conventions, and I've been to the regional, the learning days and all that, and it's usually hardly anyone at the meetings. When I got on my knees and I asked God, which I didn't understand, if something's out there, please help me. And I was arrested the next day. I took that arrest as a rescue. That was the answer to my prayer. And I too felt hopeless, helpless, miserable, and like trapped. And I knew there was a warrant for my arrest. I knew that there was at least one. I didn't know there was two. I knew my boyfriend was in jail. I knew that I wanted to stop. I knew that I couldn't. I heard a voice saying, pray, go to meetings, don't pick up, because I had been in this program before, but I couldn't. I couldn't go to meetings. Couldn't physically get myself there, and I couldn't stop using, much as I wanted to. I was using against my will, so I was rescued. And when I kicked methadone in the detention center, Baltimore City Detention Center, and kicked those benzos that I had been taking and had my using dreams of revolving around the pipe and felt like I would die, all I knew was that one prayer had worked, so maybe a second prayer would help. Couldn't hurt. And I weighed 86 pounds. All I asked was that if I die, let me die clean. When the Narcotics Anonymous sign-up sheet came around, I put my name on it, even though I could barely stand up. I had, I had seizures. I really was close to death. I really feel that the transforming power of love carried me through. Now, what happens is the way of service and the way of dedication is not always easy. It's sometimes rocky. It's not always clear. There are such things as renegade or non-sanctioned meetings. There are people who carry the message and also carry the mess. I mean, we do this because we are sick people. We may not find that out till we get here, but we are sick, and we do have come with character defects. The Narcotics Anonymous meetings wouldn't come in, and I didn't understand why they didn't come in. So the second time the sign-up sheet came around, I put my name on it and went around to all the other women. By then, I was in a dorm in Baltimore City Detention Center. I had two warrants, $20,000 bail in the city, $50,000 bail in the county. I wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. My parents said, you did the crime, you do the time. So I was there to stay, and I wanted Narcotics Anonymous because I didn't want to use, because drugs equals jail. Got that, right, after my fourth time. And the meeting still didn't come in. So I went to Jessup. And I went to orientation, and I wrote pretty much a first step on the back of the form, and I asked the addictions counselor there if I could get to Narcotics Anonymous, and he said I didn't have a lengthy enough jail sentence. Eventually, before I left, I got to three NA meetings, and someone from NA picked me up from the gates and took me to my first meeting on the outside. So I did get to N.A., but it was a process, my getting to N.A. I kept asking God, why am I still here in jail when you have changed my heart? I know that I want to stay clean a day at a time. I was so sure I had gotten this thing. But what I really learned was the lesson of compassion. And what I really learned was that we need trusted servants to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous, that it doesn't have to be that way. Because in jail, right now, as we speak, there's someone just like me who's waiting to hear a message and doesn't know where it's going to come from. And it's my responsibility to see that someone carries a message in. I mean, I don't have to be the one speaking the word. I have to be the one taking some responsibility for seeing that a speaker goes in. And so I came to H&I subcommittee the month after I'd gotten released. I believe it was the month after. It may have been that month. and I saw the woman who had brought the NA meeting into Jessup across the room. I ran across the room and hugged her. She had no idea who I was. I was like, you remember me? You told me. You gave me a schedule. You told me to keep coming back. She's like, it's a day at a time. She didn't think I was going to stay clean. She's like, just for today. I'm like, I'll never use again. Anyway, I didn't know anything about service. I didn't know anything about how to take on a commitment. I thought maybe I would make coffee in the back of the room. But I got a commitment taking meetings in to the pre-release unit for women. And I wound up being, someone who reported back to the H&I subcommittee meeting. And I went in. It became almost like my home group. Because there weren't a whole lot of people taking that commitment on. I, too, have learned to step back. I, too, have learned that I need to not hog the plate, that there are other people who can come up to the plate. And if I have too many commitments, I'm not even allowing God to work through others, But I still have an H&I commitment. And I love H&I. And I thank you all. All right, that's
thank
it.
You. Thanks. Thank you.
Ten minutes.
I don't know what I'm going to say.
I know 10 minutes is about enough for you, my bro.
Good evening, family. My name is Edgar, and I'm an addict. And I'm also a member of Narcotics Anonymous, D.C. Area Subcommittee of H&I. I first got introduced to H&I in prison. I was in prison, and people was bringing H&I meetings there. And when I went, I really didn't think I was going to get out anymore. When I went to prison the last time, I didn't really think I was going to get out anymore. So part of the second step for me was getting the sentence that told me that unless I got sick and died, that I was going to come home again. That was kind of like the second step for me. I started coming to believe that it was a power greater than me that could restore me to sanity when that happened. And when I was down Lorton one time, in 74, 75, the sergeant that used to run my dormitory used to tell other officers, if you wanted to know where the dope was at, all you had to do was follow Edgar. He would lead you straight to wherever, because I was on it. I was on it, in jail, out of jail, wherever I went. But this last sentence that I got, something strange happened. I didn't have a desire to use anymore. I think after the first year, I didn't use anymore. I used once or twice the first year, and then after that, I stopped. It just seemed like, I remember the last time I got a joint, and I went in my cell, and I smoked it. And after I smoked it, I said, now what changed? You're still here. All the circumstances that existed before you smoked a joint are still the same. What have you accomplished? And that was the first time in my life that I ever thought a thought like that about getting high, And that was the last time that I used. And H&I was coming to that institution. It was up in Hagerstown. And the meetings were kind of sporadic because the subcommittee up there didn't have the kind of participation that we have in the urban, in the more populated areas. But I got involved and to me, I kind of became instrumental in that process up there because they needed somebody on the inside because the outside people weren't able to do that much. So I think that was one of the first times in my life that I really felt a purpose. I wasn't using. And because other guys were interested in coming and stuff like that, I began to feel a purpose. They made me the chairperson. And I remember when my sentence was almost up. I had been locked up about 6 years. I was coming up for my first parole hearing. And I had a detainer in Washington. And I was in Maryland, and I had thought, I know I'm going to get a hit from the Maryland Parole Board because they just don't let people go the first time. And I had expected, that whenever I got over to D.C., they would just let me go. Well, I went up for parole in Maryland in 1996. And they granted me parole, first time up. That was almost unparalleled. You know, I had an armed robbery conviction. It was my second armed robbery conviction. Had several other drug convictions. You know, it was just, you know, I was what they considered a menace to society, a career criminal, and they let me go. So I went to D.C. thinking, oh, man, I'm getting ready to go home. I get over there, and they gave me a hit. And you know what? My thought was, well, it must be something else I need to do. You know what I'm saying? I didn't look at it negative. I looked at it like it must be something else I need to do. And now I'm kind of grateful for that because my mother had died, my father had died, I got divorced, and I needed time to heal. You know, it was a lot of pain in my life at that time, and I needed time to heal. So I guess my creator was, I thought I was ready, but I guess, you know, for real, you know, I must not have been. And I'm glad that it happened the way it did. I heard somebody say recently that we was blessed to be addicts. And now I'm beginning to see, because if it wasn't for this disease, then I would never have had the chance, the opportunity to grow in some ways that I've had the opportunity to grow. You know, I love H&I too. I feel like my gratitude speaks when I can't share with others the NA way. I truly believe in that statement. How can I come out and feel like I've been blessed and not want to do something to help somebody else that's in a similar position? You know, to me, if I wasn't doing something, I would be like being ungrateful. And I'm scared to be ungrateful. You know, I mean, Sandra said she feel like she could just sometimes ride off. But I also heard Sandra say this before. She keep coming back just in case. You know what I'm saying? Because it's worked so far, and they say if something ain't broke, don't try to fix it. You're right, too. It's always few people in the H&I meets. It's one of those situations in the program that people kind of seem like they shy away from. Can't get no glory in H&I. Nobody really see you or nothing, you know. But I love it. You know what I'm saying? And we got a nice family over in D.C., on D.C. area H&I, man. We just, they going to have to run me up out of there because I ain't going nowhere, you know. And I think I done talked about 10 minutes. Thank y'all for letting me share. You know, I'm really enjoying this convention, you know. Narcotics Anonymous is wonderful.
Thank you for sharing, sir.
I'm going to add, my name is Billy.
Hey, Billy.
I thank everybody who shared. And before we close, I just briefly, because it was strange that I got picked to secretary this particular workshop. And it was kind of like a random thing, because I just last month went and joined D.C. area H&I subcommittee, right? And I haven't picked a panel yet. I'm kind of like, because I was involved in the convention subcommittee, so kind of busy. But I'm going to my second meeting, you know, the end of this month. So I'm kind of like, it's something I've been wanting to do, right? And I remember, and this wasn't another layer of the onion thing, right? Because I was taking a renegade meeting to a treatment facility that I had been through, right? And they had an H&I meeting coming up, but they just stopped. So because I had come out of that facility, I kept on carrying a meeting. You know, and I thought I was doing a good job. I was going out and getting quality speakers. I was bringing them back up. So one day, man, I went from a meeting, and I had just opened up the meeting and everything, and I was getting ready to introduce my speaker, and these people come in bum rushed. We from da-da-da-da-da, H&I, and y'all been up here carrying this meeting around, and we going to take over, and we going to get it right. I had feelings, man. I had some serious feelings, right? You know, and they took my meeting, you know? But I understand they were doing what they had to do. I had some problems with the manner they did it, but, you know, I was powerless. You know, but that's something I had thought about in years, man. But but H&I is very dear to me because I've been in a lot of treatment facilities, man, and they've helped me a lot, or tried to help me a lot. Anyway, they was carrying the message even if I wasn't getting it, you know. So I'm fortunate to be able to be here. So before we close, we got a couple more minutes. If anybody else feel like they want to share? Otherwise, who want to read just for the day? Okay.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Darlene. Hey, Darlene. And I'm an addict. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and want to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new association, people who are now using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
Thank you.
Oh, I did it.
Yes, you did. Could we end with a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer? God, thank me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. And that concludes our workshop for AC9. Thank you, everybody, for coming out.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Jordan.